Going Linux, Episode 63, Listener Feedback. Welcome to the Going Linux Podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Tom.
Going Linux is designed to provide you with practical, day-to-day advice on how to use Linux and Linux applications to get things done. If you are moving to Linux, new to Linux, or just thinking about going Linux, then this is the podcast for you.
Every month, we publish 3 episodes. We begin the month with a listener feedback episode. In our feedback episodes, we read listener email, play listener-generated audio, and answer listener questions. On the third Tuesday of each month, Larry appears live on the Computer America show, and we post those shows, without the commercials, as podcasts.
In our user experience episodes, we take 2 months to cover a topic related to Linux. During the first month, we introduce the topic for new Linux users and recent converts to the operating system. During month 2, we discuss the same topic from a more advanced perspective for users building their confidence and competence with Linux.
In today's episode, as always, we have lots of feedback. We hope that you'll find this and all of our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done.
Well, Tom, we have lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of email and listener feedback. Did I say we have lots of it?
Well, and we've got some left over from last time because we kind of had to cut that one short.
Yes, we did. And it was a little bit abrupt, but it wasn't too bad.
No.
We were near the end, and we're going to catch up with those. But in the meantime, we've been getting more and more and more. So we've got to catch up on some of this stuff. So we'll figure out how to do that. And if you are still waiting for your listener feedback to show up on our podcast, be patient. We hope to get to all of it. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah. And hopefully you're not sitting there with a crashed machine waiting for us to tell you how to fix it.
Yeah. And we did end kind of abruptly last time, didn't we?
I had a kind of an emergency pop up. And that wouldn't have been so bad. We'd have been able to finish up. But then you had to go on a cruise.
Yes, I did.
So you just kind of stuck it together and out it went.
Yeah, I had a great time on the cruise. But coming back, I had a lot of work to do, both at work and, at home. So
that's the way it goes.
Playing catch up ever since. Yes. I think the lesson I've learned is never come back from a cruise.
Right. Oh, there you go.
Just keep on going. Lifetime cruise.
Sure.
Might get a little expensive, but
or sign
it's
on
very
as a
enjoyable.
Sign on as a porter or something.
Hey, there's an idea. Those guys work a lot though. I don't know.
That's true.
Yeah. Well, anything new in your world lately?
Let me see. I'm running right now Firefox, but I'm running the Windows version of Firefox under Wine instead of the native Linux Firefox. Ask me why.
Why, Tom?
Because I read that Firefox runs faster under Wine than the native Linux version. So I tried it, and by golly, it's true.
Really?
Really. And I've got a really slow machine. So, for instance, with Firefox before, if I'd load up a big page that had a lot of Flash and stuff on it, I go to scroll down, and it would just take forever. I'd just sit there and wait for it, and suddenly it'd scroll a lot, and I'd have to go back up. Well, it's really, really fast. It's a little bit quirky. If I go up and type anything into the Google search bar, and hit enter, Firefox says, okay, bye. And it's just gone.
Just crashes.
Yeah.
Oh, so, that's handy.
So if I want to Google something, I have to actually go to Google, but that's really not that big a handicap.
Oh, wow. Oh, well, I am really surprised that it runs that much faster. How are the fonts? That's the one thing that I find with applications running under Wine is that the fonts for the application itself look a little funky or they look like 1997 type fonts, you know?
It looks okay to me. It looks about really? The same, yeah.
Very good. Very good.
Up in the address bar, if I want to highlight that, I'm used to double-clicking up there and having the whole thing highlight.
Yeah.
And the Windows version wants, I don't know, 3 or 4 clicks or something. So I end up click, 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 come on, click, 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 click. But eventually I get it.
So the little annoyances like the Google search bar and the triple, quadruple clicking is made up for by this extra speed.
Huh? Absolutely.
Well, you know, the reason Wine is there and Crossover is there is because not everything runs under Linux that people might want to run. And it's completely acceptable to use Wine or Crossover to run those applications from that other operating system. If you've got some performance reasons like you've got,
sure.
Or, you know, if you just can't find the software that you want to run.
It would be better if Mozilla put a little more effort into porting Firefox into Linux. I think they just added a lot of fat to it to get it to run on Linux.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's the issue and they can fix it up. Let's hope.
Yeah. Maybe they'll hear this and they'll take care of that. Do that, Mozilla.
Well, on my side here, the new thing for me is that I was very, very surprised that at work there is an initiative from IT to evaluate open source software for our company.
Yay!
Yes. So they are evaluating switching over to things like OpenOffice instead of Microsoft Office and using other open source applications instead of costly proprietary software that requires a lot of licensing, a lot of money to go out and licensing. And they're also looking at replacing Windows with Ubuntu Linux.
Wow.
Yes. So I thought I was hearing things when I first heard this. And as soon as I realized that it was real, I inserted myself into that project. And I am now a volunteer evaluator running Ubuntu on my work machine.
And out of the closet, too. You can run it without having to sneak around.
Now, I would never do anything to contravene the IT policies at my work.
No.
Tom, you're casting aspersions. Come on.
I take them back.
So I'm very pleased to be running Linux at work.
Well, that's great.
Finding all of the little hiccups from a business perspective. There are some issues that we need to work out in terms of software compatibility and things like that. I have Thunderbird. We use Lotus Notes for our email system at work, and I have Thunderbird able to hook into the corporate system and be able to send and receive emails using Thunderbird from our Lotus Notes server. Using SMTP. However, there are some things that Thunderbird doesn't do that our Lotus Notes does do, and I'm trying to get the Linux version of Lotus Notes installed on my ThinkPad laptop, and am having some problems with that. I first got it installed, but then it didn't recognize my mail file. And then I uninstalled it and reinstalled it again, or tried to reinstall it. And then it told me that I had an incompatible something or other in the hardware. And I was installing it on the same machine. So it's got some flakiness in the installer, I think.
Well, that's why you need to do research.
Exactly. And I found out that there is a version of Lotus Notes that runs under Crossover. The Windows version.
Okay.
And so I'm thinking I might just install that if I can't get the Linux version installed and working, because I need my email. I'm switching back and forth between Linux and Windows just to get my email.
Ouch. It's,
yeah, I know.
By the way, I saw a headline on Slashdot the other day,
mm-hmm.
and it just about if I hadn't been sitting down, it would have sat me down. It said that Microsoft was asking the government for $20 billion in funds to help it keep alive. And I was amazed. I thought, my God, Microsoft is dying here right now.
And wow, was this on April 1st?
It was on April 1st.
Oh, good. It had you going, though, didn't it?
It did. Then and then it had a breakdown of how much it was going to cost to get people to forget about Vista. Hey, that never happened.
Sounds like a lot of fun, though.
Yeah.
Anyway, should we get into our listener feedback rather than our podcaster feedback?
Sure, why not?
Okay. Well, this time we have a couple of audio submissions, one from Reed and one from Kent. Thank you for that, folks. And we also have a photographic feedback from Eduardo.
Photographic feedback. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, we'll get to that, but first, let's play the first question from Reed.
Hello, Going Linux. I've really enjoyed the show. I've listened on several of your episodes, and you guys are doing a great job, and I really enjoy the information that you're sharing. But I would like to ask a couple of questions today. I have a Ubuntu. I'm running on my Gateway laptop. P7811, which is a pretty much a gaming laptop, but I don't think I'm getting the performance I should be getting. Every time I look at the CPU usage, even though I don't have any applications running, I always fluctuate between 50% and 65% between the two CPUs, even though it appears that hardly anything is actually running. So I was wondering if you guys could inform me how I can mitigate that issue. And also, my Firefox recently started. I got Firefox 3.0 loaded on the laptop, and recently I can't get any of the themes to work, and it seems to crash every now and then on some sites where I'm trying to watch some video. I was watching CNET TV, and Firefox just went, very dark gray, indicating I had to force quit it. So I was wondering if you guys had some tips of what's going on there, because on the Firefox I've lost all my icons, so the back and forward are actually words instead of arrows or icons of arrows to show me to go backwards or forwards, or a curved arrow to show me to reload. They just spell out the words, and I can't get any of the themes to take to replace the icon, so I was hoping you can give me some tips there. One final note, I enjoy Going Linux. It looks like you guys have the audio podcast covered, but I was wondering, is there anything similar to the DLTV or the TechZilla type podcast or videocast on the Linux side? Well, once again, this is Reed. Really like the show. Hope you have some answers for my questions. Thanks.
Well, Reed, it sounds like something is running all the time on your computer, and I think the easiest way to find out what that is to use either the top command, that's T-O-P, Tango Oscar Papa, at the command line, or to use the system monitor in Ubuntu. And the way you get to the system monitor is click on the system menu, then administration, then system monitor. Once that comes up, make sure you've got the processes tab selected, or for those of us outside of the United States, processes tab. Then click the percent CPU header, the little header above the column that displays the percent CPU. Click that twice. That will sort it in order of what's taking up the CPU cycles, so that the one that's taking up the most is at the top of the list. And in either top or in the system monitor, you will be able to figure out which application is chewing up your cycles, your CPU cycles. And once you've done that, you need to figure out is that something that you need running? If it is, then unfortunately you're going to have to put up with the performance hit in order to keep that running. Now, if it is something that you don't need, or worse still, something that you didn't know was even running and don't want running, then you've got to stop it and then figure out why it's running, why is it starting up, and prevent it from starting again. Without knowing what it is, or if that's even the problem, I think I'll leave it at that and let you do some investigation and get back to us.
I'm guessing he's got some fancy KDE eye candy running.
Well, that could be. He did say that he's running Ubuntu rather than Kubuntu, but
I don't know.
Maybe he's running some fancy desktop effects or something like that that take up a lot of cycles, and depending on the age of his computer. But he does say he's got a dual core computer, so it can't be that old. But perhaps the amount of RAM that he has is causing the CPU to work a little bit overtime with all this stuff.
Whatever it is, finding that process that's sucking all that all the resources is going to be easy to find. There it is, right at the top.
Yeah, I would think so. And it could be whatever is taking up your CPU cycles is causing your Firefox problem as well. So I would check that out first, see if that fixes your Firefox problems. And if not, for those problems, you might want to again try turning off desktop effects if that is chewing up some cycles that Firefox may be trying to use. And as you observe, Tom, Firefox under Linux uses some more resources than it does under Windows.
It's greedy, yeah.
Yeah, and more than likely it is misbehaving because of some sort of plugin or theme you've installed. If you've got one that's written poorly, it could cause Firefox to crash. If you've got too many running for the amount of RAM that you have, it could cause Firefox to crash. So my recommendation, at least to begin diagnosing the problem, would be to disable all of your themes and plugins and then see if that fixes the problem. If it does, then I would reinstall the default theme to see if you can get your buttons and icons back. And if that works, then begin re-enabling your plugins one at a time and see if anything causes your Firefox to crash. And if one of them does, you've probably isolated the problem to that particular plugin and maybe you won't be able to use that. So alternatively, if none of that works, you could uninstall Firefox, delete the hidden.mozilla Firefox directory under your home directory, and that will erase all of your settings, then reinstall Firefox and see if that fixes it. That should bring back at least your icons and and everything else, and you can start over again.
Whatever it is, it's fixable.
Yes, I think so.
Okay, and then about video podcasts on Linux, why don't you check out Jupiter Broadcasting, formerly known as the Linux Action Show. And that's jupiterbroadcasting.com, or Category 5, which is www.category5.tv.
That's the number 5, not the word 5.
Right. And that's live TV and a podcast.
Right.
And then there's lastly Linux Planet. That's linuxplanet.org/casts for additional podcast listings.
Right. We're listed on Linux Planet as well, but there's a lot of other things listed there, including videos. So you should be able to find lots and lots and lots of stuff that you're looking for. And thanks for that feedback.
Yeah, thanks.
And our next audio feedback is a comment from Kent providing an answer to another listener's question. Let's go ahead and play that.
Hi, Larry and Tom. This is Kent from Sweden. I have a small comment on the answer you gave to one of your listeners on episode 60, I guess it was, that he or she is running the XVM VirtualBox, which is basically the Sun VirtualBox. It was the name of the product before Sun Company bought the VirtualBox. Nowadays, it's just named Sun VirtualBox. And the reason that he couldn't get the full screen and just could run his Linux on the small window. It's not actually the Linux fault. It's the problem is on VirtualBox that he need to install the guest addition extras, something like that is name. If he goes to menus up there, he can see it directly. So what he need to do, he need to install the guest addition. And he goes to the menus and just if he choose, I think it's on the second menus on the top when he's running Fedora or Ubuntu on the VirtualBox menus, not on the Linux menus. So as soon as he run it, his system, Linux system automatically mount a CD drive. And he have to go to /media/CD-ROM, might be CD-ROM 0. And then there are a couple of scripts, depend on whether he's running Windows as a guest or Linux as a guest or Solaris as a guest. The one which his name is VBox Linux x86, which I guess he's running x86.run. He just need to run that command script and as a administrator and then restart the VirtualBox. And whoops, he had all Windows there instead of just a small window in the middle of his window operating system. So that's it. Thank you very much. Bye.
Well, thanks, Kent, for really going into that in depth for us. That's one thing that the listeners are so helpful with. We don't try everything. I'm not running XVM, and I'm not about to set it up to see how it doesn't work. So,
yeah, right.
It's really nice that we have people jumping in like that for us. Thanks, Kent.
Exactly. And I haven't used XVM as a virtual machine, although I've used a couple of other virtual machine software programs. And I had a suspicion that this was a VM problem, not a Linux problem. But it's good to have somebody actually using the software confirm that and provide the solution. So again, thanks, Kent.
Right. Next up, we've got Nick. And Nick puts it pretty bluntly, your show rocks. Where's the Audacity screencast? Sincerely, Nick.
Well, Nick, yeah, very blunt. And here's the blunt answer. I've already responded to Nick on email, but I got started doing the screencast and was severely unhappy with the results. I had some issues learning how to do video editing, which I had never done under Linux before. Found some little quirkiness of the program that I was using, Vitamux, to do the editing, and found out that rather than record the video first and then insert the audio afterwards, I'm going to do it the other way around, audio first, then do the video. So I'm starting over again. I'm sure that we'll have much better results. Please be patient. We will have it. It will be wonderful, and it'll be available at screencasts.goinglinux.com. And in the meantime, we have some links to some other screencasts from other sources there.
Good deal.
Okay. Next up, we have an email from Brian, who provided us with a link to the Ubuntu Pocket Guide and Reference. It's a rather long URL, so I will include that in the show notes. And just a summary from the website. I'm not going to read everything that's on there, but it says, in the midst of the current financial crunch, the popular free Linux distribution Ubuntu has never looked more attractive. If you're considering switching, a free copy of the Ubuntu Pocket Guide is the perfect place to start. Written by Keir Thomas, author of Ubuntu Kung Fu, Ubuntu Pocket Guide and Reference covers all the beginner to expert knowledge you'll need to make the move to Ubuntu. And there's much more there on the website, let alone looking at the Ubuntu Pocket Guide itself. So go ahead and download your copy. And it's available on Amazon for $10, but why pay $10 on Amazon when you can download a free PDF from this link that we'll provide you in the show notes?
And that pocket guide really is very, very well done.
Yes, it is.
It's very much geared toward beginners. So right out of the box, you've never looked at Linux, here is the guide that you want. And by the way, I have stopped recommending Ubuntu for newbies.
Why? Oh, why is that?
Because I checked out the latest version of Mint, Linux Mint, which is really Ubuntu based.
Yes.
But it is just so slick. And If you're not worried about stepping on proprietary toes, it just fires up with everything running. It's capable of just about anything. That with Ubuntu, you have to get in there and tweak it.
Yes, you do. And Linux Mint has that nice minty color.
It has the minty color, and it looks very much like XP.
You just turned me off, Tom.
Well, for people coming over from Windows, when you click on it's like an applications icon.
Yeah.
The way it opens up is very, very similar. It looks very similar to XP.
Oh, that's great. Yes, for switchers, that would be wonderful to be in a familiar environment with that nice minty fresh flavor.
Minty fresh. Okay, next up, Brad wrote, "Hi, Larry and Tom." Hi, Brad.
Hi, Brad.
"I've been listening to your podcast for a while now, and it's one of my favorites. I moved to Ubuntu about a year ago from XP and haven't had much for problems. Any problems that I've had, I've been able to figure out on my own. You always hear about Firefox being more secure than Internet Explorer. How do other Linux browsers compare to Firefox for security? Also, I've been trying out Opera 9.6, which works well, except that I have not been able to find a good way to watch videos through the browser, such as movie trailers from Apple. I've been trying MPlayer, VLC, Zine, but all have been a hit or miss. Some things play, some things don't. I use Totem with GStreamer, and in Firefox, everything just seems to work and works well. I've been trying to get Opera to use Totem and GStreamer with no luck, and have had no luck with the other players to work with Opera. Is there a way to do this? Thanks for the great podcast, Brad."
Well, Brad, regarding the security in Firefox and other browsers, I can't really comment on that. I've tried using Opera for a little bit of time and found that it was just a little too quirky and awkward for me. I much prefer browsing in Firefox and the way Firefox has plugins and so on. So I can't really comment on that. If you don't have any suggestions there, Tom, maybe we can ask our audience to provide some suggestions on comparing the security of Firefox with other browsers, and in particular Opera, which is the one that Brad seems to be interested in.
Opera, it's a very good browser. I use it for some things, but I really have not. I'm not an online movie trailer viewer, so I really don't have any experience with it there. If you've been using Opera for a while, you're probably in love with it, so I can see why you want to make it work rather than switch to something else. As far as security is concerned, when you've got an active project like Firefox or Opera, when a vulnerability is found, they jump on it pretty fast. Firefox had a vulnerability a couple of weeks ago, and I think it was 48 hours until it upgraded and fixed that. So Microsoft is pretty glacial in responding to vulnerabilities.
Right. They definitely are. And regarding the audio and video through your browser, Firefox has done a lot of work in making its browser compatible. And quite frankly, I just go in Ubuntu to the package manager and install the Ubuntu Restricted Extras, which installs all of the audio plugins for the operating system and for the browser for Firefox. And I have yet to have a problem playing any sort of video or audio in Firefox. Now, I'm not sure that it's going to install everything that you need for Opera. I don't know the compatibility of Opera with a lot of these plugins or its development cycles. So again, if somebody who's using Opera on a regular basis can suggest where to get the multimedia plugins for Opera under Linux, that would be a good contribution you could make to help out Brad.
One more thing, you might want to go to the Ubuntu forums and search for the word Opera and see if somebody else is asking the same questions.
Yeah, good idea. Next up, John wrote us. "Hi, Larry and Tom."
Hi, John.
Hi, John. "Love what you guys do. Sometimes Tom's audio is too low. Crank it up, Tom. Can't hear him. That may be me in the editing, but that's okay. I think we got that fixed last time around.
I hope so.
I wish we would do a program on wireless in Ubuntu. That's all I need. Wireless just won't work. NDIS wrapper or WCID, WCID just can't get the job done. Wired, no problem. My laptop, a compact Presario V2630 with XP Home, works great wired, but keep up the good work, guys. We do need you out there, John and Dallas.
Thanks, John. And I wrote back to John, thanks for all the kind words. And yeah, we do get a lot of comments about my audio. Some people say it's too loud, some too soft, and one person even said it was too bright, but I think that's a matter of education. And we do keep trying to get it right. And as far as the network's concerned, I'm still not networked. Larry, you are, so I can't help much with that. I suggest that you start with the excellent docs at the Ubuntu Guide, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes. Also, the Ubuntu forums are a wonderful resource, as I just said, that everyone using Ubuntu should get to know, and we'll put a link to those in the show notes. And if you search for your problem and you can't find where someone else had the same problem and it got answered, go ahead and ask yourself. One hint, you should register even before you search. Because if you're not registered, you have to go through challenge questions, and that gets it out of the way. And I hope that helps.
Yeah. Well, and after a few email exchanges with John, we discovered more detail on the problem. He wrote, in hardware drivers dialog, I have Broadcom B43 driver installed, but not activated. It won't allow me to do that. Trying to activate it, the box just sits there and says, trying to download, but nothing ever happens. Of course, I'm wired during these operations. I'm using the WCID network manager. I've read this is much better than what Ubuntu provides. Is that correct? Well, it used to be, John, but not necessarily with the current version of network manager that's packaged with Ubuntu. At times, I've noticed that WCID will connect wirelessly, but with no functionality. I can't get on the net. Just nothing, but WCID shows connected. Right now, I had to force a disconnection in WCID to connect wired. Should I lose this connection manager and go back to Ubuntu's? Yes, I'm on Intrepid. Well, if you're on Intrepid, I would say yes, go back to Ubuntu's network manager. And he says this HP Presario is 32 with AMD Turion 64 technology, ATI graphics, Radeon Express M200. Sounds like he's on a different computer than he first was. Does run comp is sort of, he says, only in flat screen, no cube. In hardware dialog, it shows the FLRGX driver activated. I think that's the driver. Now I can't get the hardware driver dialog again. After it goes gray, it stops. It won't display again until I restart. Something's obviously wrong. Thanks for help and suggestions. John in Dallas.
Right, and following up then, John decided to uninstall WCID and go back to the standard Ubuntu GNOME network manager. We provided step-by-step instructions for installing the network manager package from the CD. And those are, number one, with Ubuntu running and the 8.10 CD in the drive, open the Synaptic Package Manager and from the Settings menu, choose Repositories. Number two, on the Ubuntu Software tab, select the checkbox in the window at the bottom of the page labeled CD-ROM DVD. Number three, click Close and save your changes. Number four, a dialog box will appear asking if you want to update the list of repositories. Click Reload and update the list. Number five, search for and install network-manager-gnome. And number six, and lastly, log out and log back in to get the network manager to start.
By the way of explanation, the way the package manager works is this. Your hard drive doesn't actually contain the software that is in the list of available packages. It's just a list of what was available in the repository the last time you connected to the net. You can check to install something that's on the list, but unless there's a place for Synaptic to go to find the files it needs, in this case the internet or a CD-ROM, then it can't actually install anything. The repository is generally the Ubuntu website where all this stuff's stored. A small portion of the available software is on the installation CD. So, as in John's case, if it's on the CD, you can tell the package manager to look there. That's what the instructions we gave to John do. That should have gotten him up and running again. However, John's wired connection also failed, so the package manager would fail even after disabling all of the repositories except for the CD. It would always try to connect to the internet. In the end, John found a solution, courtesy of the Wicked support team. John wrote us, "Just to keep you informed on this dilemma. On the chance that the Wicked folks might help me, I asked them in the forum, simple solution. Go to a terminal and type sudo space ifconfig space eth 0 space up. How? Who knows? I reinstalled from Synaptic Manager and checked in software choices and it worked. Up and okay. I know I tried reinstalling from the Synaptic Manager before, but no results. Apparently the sudo command did something. Thanks for all your research and trying to help. I do appreciate it. File this away for some poor newbie having the same problem. John in Dallas."
Thanks for the update, John. We were really focused on helping you install Network Manager that we completely missed the fact that you already had Wicked installed and just wanted something to work. For those listening, here's an anatomy of the command that John used to fix his problem. He typed sudo ifconfig eth 0 up. Of course, sudo runs the command as if you were administrator. Ifconfig is a command that changes the configuration of your computer's network card. Eth 0, usually this represents a wired card. A wireless card will usually be 1-0 or something like that. But that's Ethernet card 0.
Yeah, I've noticed in Intrepid, though, that it's using eth 0 for the wireless card as well for some reason. So, yeah.
And, of course, the word up then just turns on the card, connects it.
Mm-hmm.
And we are really glad that things are working for you again, John. And then next up, we've got an email from Jim. And Jim says, "Hey, Larry and Tom."
Hey, Jim.
"I've enjoyed your podcast for about a year now. I work in an environment where we use both Windows and Linux. A coworker posed a question that stumped me. On a Windows machine, you can hold down the Alt key while pressing numbers in the numerical keypad and get the equivalent ASCII character inserted within your document. This works in all manner of text editors, Office, OpenOffice, and within entry fields of various applications. It's very convenient for inserting symbols into scientific and engineering documents. For example, I can write 32 degrees by typing 32 and then Alt 248. This is a lot easier than mouse clicking through a character map. Is there any equivalent shortcut within the Linux GNOME framework? Best regards, Jim."
Well, Jim, yes, there is. While Microsoft chooses to use the ASCII standard codes, Unix systems use the standard Unicode. According to the Unicode.org website, Unicode provides a unique number for every character, no matter what the platform, no matter what the program, no matter what the language. In Windows, Alt 248 is the ASCII character with the code 248, of course. This translates to Control Shift U 00B0, which is the Unicode character 00B0, which of course translates into the degree symbol. And you want to use that in Linux, Unix, or any other Unix-like environment. When you press Control-Shift-U, in the line that you're typing, an underlined lowercase u appears. and that is indicating that it's waiting for the character code. Then when you type the code, that underlined U is replaced with the special character. You can create a degrees Celsius character by typing Ctrl-Shift-U, then 2103. Degrees Fahrenheit is Ctrl-Shift-U, 2109. You can try it in your favorite Linux text editor. It works. The Unicode site provides an alphabetical index by name of the character. We'll have a link to that index in the show notes, of course. It also allows you to download a Unicode chart in PDF format. So if you want it on your hard drive so you can refer to it while you're offline, you can go to www.unicode.org/charts, and that PDF file groups the characters according to their character set. And we also provided Jim with a forum thread that provided more detail from the Ubuntu forums. We'll have a link to that in the show notes. And the forum post says that it apparently doesn't work in OpenOffice, but I tested it in OpenOffice 3 and it works just fine. So that may have been for previous versions of OpenOffice.
And now a trivia question.
Yes.
Up above the number 3, you've got the crosshatch or pound sign. You know what the official name of that is?
Octothorpe.
Yes, isn't that a cool word? Octothorpe.
Yes, I thought that was great.
That's going to be my screen name somewhere.
Yeah, I heard that on the Linux Outlaws podcast. That's where I learned that. In fact, mentioning Linux Outlaws, let's play their promo at the end of our episode here.
I like their promo.
Those guys are great. Okay. Now, what do we have next, Tom?
Well, the next one's from Jay. Jay says, "Hey, guys. Hey, Jay.
Hey, Jay.
Love the podcast. I'm a recent convert to Linux, specifically Ubuntu 8.10. I have a question and a problem. First, the question. Jaunty Jackalope will be coming out soon, and I just listened to episode 36 where you guys touched on upgrading versus fresh install. If I decide to go the fresh install route, I'll take your advice and back up my home directory and insert it into the fresh install when finished. My question is, when I do that, will it automatically reinstall those programs, or will I have to do that myself? And now the problem. I'm trying to connect my camera to my computer and upload the photos, but it won't mount. It's giving me an unknown error message." And unknown error he puts in quotes. "It's like the computer can't even figure out why it won't mount. It's leaving me with no leads to fix it. The camera is a Canon SD500, and I can't seem to find any solutions on the net. Got any suggestions? Thanks, and keep up the good work. Jay."
Well, Jay, it's great to have you listening to the show, and we'll have to research the camera issue unless one of our listeners can help. Regarding the fresh install, no, the advice we gave will not reinstall your applications. You will need to install them yourself. There is a way, though, to generate a list of packages that you've already installed. Then use that list to select them for installation when you have installed the new operating system afresh. It's a command line tip, but I'll include links to the two posts from the Ubuntu forums that illustrate it quite well. The command you want to use to generate the list and save it as a file named selections_file.txt is dpkg, and the command line is dpkg, which is dpkg, space, dash, dash, get, dash selections, space, then the greater than sign, space, selections_file.txt. And translating that, dpkg is the program, get selections is what you're asking it to do. The greater than symbol sends the output of that command into a text file. So essentially, it is saving the list of the programs that you have currently installed in your current Ubuntu distribution onto a text file. Of course, you want to save that so that when you install your Jaunty Jackalope from scratch, you can read that list back in and tell the package manager that that's the list of things that you want to install. So the way you do that is after you've got the new operating system installed, you run dpackage again, this time dpackage space dash dash set dash selections space the less than symbol space selections underscore file dot txt. That runs dpackage with the set selection switch. And the less than symbol says read from the text file, and that tells the package manager what it is you want to install. Then you open the package manager, refresh, and run the install from there. And click the little check marks, the little green check mark in the Synaptic Package Manager to actually install the programs that you've told it to install using the text file. We'll include links to the couple of Ubuntu forum threads that give more detail and discussion on this. And thanks for listening, Jake.
Yeah, and just a comment. You can do all that stuff and get yourself a boat ready to get into in case you have a problem, and then go ahead and try upgrading. And if the upgrade works, no problem. And if it doesn't work out so well for you, there you have that backup ready to go.
Yep. Upgrades have been problematic for me.
I haven't had a problem yet.
Yeah. I don't know why. Maybe it's my hardware. Maybe it's my approach. Maybe it's the way that I sit on the chair when I do it. I don't know, but it never has worked for me.
I usually wait a month or 6 weeks and let them work out the bugs.
Well, just about a month ago, I tried upgrading an Ubuntu 7.10 installation to Hardy Heron. Both of those are fairly old at this point, so I know Hardy would have been very stable. So when I was upgrading, it should have had the latest Hardy stuff. It wouldn't boot.
Oh.
Yeah, so it just completely crapped out on me. So I just reinstalled Intrepid.
You must not be living right. And next up, Eduardo wrote, "Hello there, I'm a new listener, and I got around to installing Ubuntu Linux 8.10 on my notebook. Everything works out of the box except my notebook's webcam. It uses UVC video from what I've found on the internet, and I want to use it with cheese. So, can I make videos that I can edit and then post on YouTube? Cheese, unfortunately, doesn't pick up the webcam. I've compiled UVC already, but nothing from Cheese. I'm not sure what else I'm supposed to do, so any help would be awesome. Thanks, and keep up the good work."
Yeah, now we've worked with Eduardo a little bit back and forth to get things going, so let's just kind of walk through what we've done. We sent him a couple of suggestions, first of all, regarding some problems people were having with Cheese. It did seem to be a bit of a problem. When Ubuntu 8.10 first came out, we provided him with an Ubuntu forums post on some of the problems and some of the possible solutions. Googled around a little bit, found some suggestions on a WordPress blog from someone who was trying to do the same thing on a Dell computer. Unfortunately, Eduardo returned an email saying that he had tried our suggestions without a resolution. He wrote, "Thanks, I did the second one, and now Cheese makes the webcam indicator on the webcam light up, but the program just closes. Not sure what else to do." Finally, Eduardo said in another email, "Oh my gosh, I just disabled desktop effects and Cheese works. Thank you so much for your help. I finally have no more reason to switch back to Windows. Thanks so much and keep up the fantastic work." And here's where the photographic feedback comes in, Tom. He says, "Got everything set up now. Just like to thank you guys for taking the time to help me out with my issue and made this for you." We'll include a link to his picture that he took with Cheese from his webcam.
From his webcam.
He's running KDE 4, and he's written on a piece of paper in front of its face using his webcam, "Thanks, guys. Love, GLP."
There we go. Excellent.
Eduardo, thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks for keeping us informed of your efforts, and especially the final resolution. That might just help somebody else who's having the same problem with Cheese. That is a major success story, buddy.
Yes. Okay, Tom, it's official. We've got way too much email to cover in one episode.
Right. We will try to catch up over several episodes, and we'll likely have to summarize some of them, as we did today, rather than read them in their entirety. Sorry about that.
Yeah. In our next episode, we have Computer America number 12, if I've got my schedule right. If not, it's an advanced episode. If not, it's a user experience episode. But until then, you can go to the articles and show notes at goinglinux.com for more information and detailed instructions with screenshots.
Email us with comments, questions, suggestions, and photographic feedback. And remember, if you have a topic suggestion, use the Podcast Alley button to leave your topic suggestion while you vote for us on their site. Send us an audio comment by email. We'll play it on the show. And that email is goinglinux@gmail.com.
And one more addition, Tom.
Yeah?
We now are on Twitter. So if you go to twitter.com/goinglinux, you can follow us there. So go ahead and do that. And you can also download our podcasts from our website or from iTunes if you're still using Windows. You can also use our Flash Player right on our website to play the audio episodes right from the website using Flash.
And, of course, you can always get future episodes delivered directly to your computer automatically as soon as a new episode is available. Instructions on how to do that are on the website.
Until next time, thanks for listening.
Talk to you later.
Fab! 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 Oi!
Yeah? What?
Look, we're supposed to be doing this promo. What are you doing?
That promo, that's not really outlaw-y, is it?
Well, it may be, but, you know, these people have let us on their show. The least we can do is, you know, do the thing. So get your script. Come on, let's do it.
Alright. Are you curious about Linux?
Do you find Windows boring and Macs overpriced?
Do you want to know what all that open source stuff is about?
Check out Linux Outlaws,
a podcast about Linux and all kinds of open source technologies.
Brought to you by two regular guys, us, in fact, who like to play around with this stuff.
We talk about the latest news in open source and the general technology world.
We review the wackiest distros and the neatest tools.
Have a beer or two.
And generally try to have fun, all with a slightly European perspective.
If we got you curious and you want to learn more about Linux,
or maybe you already know all about it and you just want a good dose of geek humor once a week,
check out linuxoutlaws.com and subscribe to our feed.
Linux Outlaws.
It's not crap.
Definitely.
Music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.